Mormon Transitions podcast was created to promote individual healing and growth, and to prevent or minimize the depression, anxiety, and frustration that often comes with an LDS faith crisis or awakening. It's my ethical obligation as a licensed psychologist to note that what you're about to hear may sound like psychotherapy, but it's not. It is a practical tool to help you make your journey toward authenticity without sacrificing the best parts of your life. Mormon Transitions is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and relies solely upon the support of people like you, its listeners. To help keep the podcast alive or to become a member of the community, please become a monthly subscriber by visiting mormontransitions.org and clicking on the yellow button on the right side of the page under support. All contributions to Mormon Transitions are completely tax deductible and go towards producing the podcast and building communities and programs of support for Mormons like you. Thanks for your support. Hello and welcome to another episode of Mormon Transition. I'm your host, Christy Money, and tonight we're going to talk about healing through a faith transition with humor. So I have with me Brother Jake Frost, and his wife, Erica Schertz. So by night, Jake is the creator of the Brother Jake series, a satirical YouTube channel about Mormonism, and a panelist at Infants on Thrones. By day, he works as a data scientist for a healthcare company, and Erica is an alumnus of the University of Michigan and Indiana University's School of Music and Violin Performance, and she is now a professional performer and teacher. She is also the primary and final editor of all the Brother Jake videos. Jake and Erica, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about this episode. I'm a huge fan of you guys.
And we are fans of you.
Oh, thanks. Now,
you actually know people in common, don't you? You knew something, didn't?
Yeah, I think my brother went to school with Christy, right?
Yes.
I think so. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
He'll remain nameless so that he's unsullied by us.
Yeah, good guy, and small world in Mormondom. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, both of y'all come from multi-generational LDS families, right? That you said trace back to Hiram Smith?
Oh.
Right, because you're straight from Hiram. I'm from Jesse N. Smith, who was Hiram's first cousin or something like that, or Joseph Smith's first cousin.
So we're both related. We are related.
To each other. I wish we found out at the wedding reception, I think.
No, I think we found out when we were engaged.
Oh,
but
my
brother, who's a geneticist, figured out that it's fine. I think we're fifth cousins three times removed from somewhere on the Hiram Smith line.
Oh, wow.
I think I'm a little bit more directly related.
You're closer to the...
Yeah, I guess I have a little bit more Mormon royalty.
Right, yeah, but you have a little more of the rich Mormon blood.
But it's okay. We kept it in the family.
Right. That was an interesting conversation when you guys got engaged. Before we launch into talking about Brother Jake videos and Infants on Thrones and all the great work you both do there, I'd love for you guys to tell me more about your childhood in the church and your faith journey. Love to hear that story. So, Erica, would you be willing to start us off and start wherever you'd like?
Sure. I was born of goodly parents. So I'm youngest of six. I was born in Salt Lake and grew up most of my formative years in Utah and Provo. And, I grew up in a faithful family. My parents were and still are both very faithful. And, I think it was a little bit more of a liberal upbringing than most people in Utah. My mom was, a huge fan of Leonard Arrington and has been going to Sunstone since its conception. And so, while they were both fairly... Why are you smiling at me?
I'm just looking at your lovely face.
Okay. You're making me
Okay, I won't look at you while you're talking.
Yeah, so grew up in a faithful family, but my parents were, Jake would call them TBM, but I would say a little bit more. They had a little bit more of a gray belief. I don't know. It wasn't black and white in my house. I would say that.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And growing up in the church, I loved it because of Young Women's and all of my friends. I mean, my ward was like a 2-block radius, and so it was very comfortable. Everyone knew me. It was very supported. I never really enjoyed going to the temple with youth activities. I felt weird, and so it was kind of, I don't know, I never had like a conversion experience, you know, or if I was at girls camp and someone was doing a testimony meeting, I would like try to cry so I could like prove my worthiness or my testimony, but I never really had like a burning in the bosom or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed Mormonism, and my upbringing was a positive one. So yeah, that's kind of my early years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You were always kind of on the fringes a little bit in some ways, at least because like you were, first of all, you were more politically minded than many kids. So we actually knew each other in high school, and she was one of like 3 members of the Democrats for Tempe.
Democratic Association.
Right. DAF. DAF.
I think there were 8 members.
Right. Okay. So there's one. There's
which I'm still friends with.
Right. Anyway, you were one of very few.
Yeah, it was a blue household in a very red state.
Yeah,
but still a very faithful. I did the whole seminary thing.
Right.
My mom made me graduate.
Right. You guys did like family home evening and scripture reading and things.
But
like
after
that.
Family home evening, we did family home evening on Sundays, and then we all watched Simpsons afterwards. So
yeah, so that's I think that's actually a good description of kind of where it was. You know, it was a little on the wild side.
Yeah.
Drinking some Diet Cokes here and there.
Mm-hmm. We didn't really have soda, but that was more of a health thing than like a word of wisdom thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could have just said, yeah.
I'm sorry. Anyway, yeah.
Okay. And how about you, Jake? What was it like for you growing up?
Yeah, yeah. So I grew up youngest of 8. So beat you there, even though you're more royalty. So youngest of 8, and I grew up in rural Arizona, my parents were really involved in the community there. Like my dad had grown up there as well, and he was like stake president and things like that when I was like before I was born. He passed away when I was young, and when my sophomore year of high school, my mom decided that she wanted to go to law school. He had actually been an attorney. She wanted to go to law school, and so she took the LSAT and got into BYU Law School, and I moved to Provo. So that's Eric and I actually met in high school after I'd moved there, and my mom went to law school, and I went to high school. We graduated the same year, but you know, I had a very I would say that I had a lot of very intense personal, you know, spiritual experiences. Like that was a very pivotal moment for me, like dealing with my father's death and things like that. That was something that made me really feel strongly about things like the resurrection and the Book of Mormon and things like that. So I had more of a kind of my own personal conversion story that I had in my head than Erica did. And I served a mission in Peru, the Lima North Mission. So, and then when I got back, I'd see now at this point our histories are kind of intertwining. So I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So we dated a little bit in high school.
Mm-hmm. We're not high school sweethearts. So
right.
I went.
Right. Probably. It's a little Ross and Rachel in high school. But you know, by the end we were Chandler and Monica, so.
Oh man.
Okay.
Great.
I was Monica. and So when I was on my mission, we got we had almost like kind of a reverse Dear John, where I went on my mission and I was kind of like, see you later, see you never, have a nice life. And then almost kind of daring her to keep in touch.
I think he exactly said, he literally said those words. See you never, have a nice life. Like, I'll never talk to you again.
Ooh, ouch.
But it wasn't like, I didn't feel like I was doing it like out of spite, though.
Oh, you totally were. It was like, you broke up with me, I'll never see you again because I'm going on a mission. That's exactly what it was.
So did you marry me out of spite then? You're like, I'll show you who's never going to see anybody again.
Well, that's how I wrote you. I was like, I'll show you.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't work very well.
Yeah. Anyway, so then we wrote back and forth on my mission and kept in touch that way. And then when I got back, we dated for a while. Her last year in Michigan, we dated long distance, and then we got married the following summer. But knowing Erica was actually a big part of my she actually ruined my testimony.
Okay.
Yeah, so she was the bad influence.
How do you feel about that description, Erica?
Well, I shed some light on some things, but I don't know. Whenever I explain our relationship to Mormonism, I kind of put it on like a 10-point scale, and like one is like apostate ex-Mormon, hate the church or whatever, and 10 is like super TBM. And I was kind of around a 4. No, I put it the other way. Anyway, I was like around a 4. You know, I had.
Well, you can't just reverse the scale. You have to.
I know. I used to
use. So does it say 6?
I was a 6? No, because that's.
Because okay, 10 is super TBM.
Can I start over? Can you edit this? Because I switched it.
Wait, okay.
Okay. Whenever
it's a 2-axis matrix.
3-dimensional.
Right.
Okay. Whenever I'm describing our relationship to Mormonism, I explain it on a 10-point scale. So a 1 would be like ex-Mormon, not believer, not interested at all. And 10 would be like a true believing TBMs, totally in. And when Jake got back from his mission, I was probably like a 5, 6 or 5, and he was like a 7 or 8. And then probably after, I don't know, a year or two of marriage, 2 years of marriage maybe, I was like at a 4 or 5, and he was like at a 2 or 3. So he just kind of leapfrogged me, where it was. I don't know if that makes sense.
I feel like it kind of got lost in the weeds there.
Well, it totally makes sense.
Okay.
Jake, you were relatively still all in, and after your mission, 2 years after marriage, you were much less so, and Erica, you had changed a little bit, but not as much. Okay, so how did that affect your relationship?
Well, so it kind of, I mean, I feel like it's kind of colored it from the very beginning, because when we were corresponding on my mission, we actually got to the point where we would record, like voice, do like voice recordings, yeah, and then like burn them onto a CD and then send them back and forth, basically, or you would email them to me, but I didn't have a way to email. I don't know. Anyway, the point is they're voice recordings, and some of the times. And there's actually some pretty incredible exchanges. When I say incredible, they're just like super cringeworthy and terrible. Because she's like, I'm kind of. This was like in 2008. So I was in Peru at this time. I was on my mission in 2008.
2007 to 2008. You're right. It was
2007 to 2009. So all of the 2008 election cycle, I was out of the country. You know, I was totally cut off. So. She was having all these a lot of these issues kind of came to the surface in the wake of like Prop 8, because she had, you know, gay friends that were like, why, you know, you're Mormon, what the hell's going on? And she's like, I don't know about all this. Like, am I describing this correctly? Sorry, I feel like I'm putting words in your mouth.
Yeah, no, I mean, my friends, I was as soon as I went to Michigan, it became clear that I was a liberal person, and my gay friends knew I was Mormon, but knew I wasn't like questioning their validity as humans or anything, and I was very supportive of them, and it was kind of like, I'm Mormon but I'm cool, don't think that I hate gay people and, like, registered lots of people to vote for Obama and was upset about the church supporting Prop 8. And
right. And so you brought some of that stuff up in our correspondences, and I have, you know, all these recordings of me kind of coming back and being like, well, Sodom and Gomorrah. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's pretty bad. And someday I'm planning on splicing that together with like for Infants on Thrones, and like kind of a, if I can change and you can change, everybody can change. But it the Rocky IV reference, right? Yeah, because it would be like me versus me, you know, 8 or 9 years ago or whatever. So, so that kind of colored the relationship. So when I got back from my mission, we actually talked a little bit more about this, that type of thing. And it was kind of, it just kind of got to this point where she started making a lot of sense. I couldn't really refute the arguments. It just never really occurred to me that gay people weren't gross. I know that sounds terrible, but like, that's true. That's just, it just never really crossed my mind.
And you have grown.
Right. Now I'm super gay.
His mom has never forgiven me.
No, she's, yeah. So that kind of colored the relationship from the beginning, but
Colored makes it sound bad.
Well, I feel, I guess it does, doesn't it? But I mean, it didn't make it bad. It was just, it's been an element in our relationship basically the whole time that we've been married and before.
Right.
So it's not something that, there has been some evolution, but it wasn't like we got to a point where it was kind of 0 to 60. Like there are a lot of couples that where one person kind of goes through this transition in private, and then they go to their significant other and they say, look, I'm having all these issues, and it comes like out of the blue.
I've been having them for 3 years.
And that's not how it went.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
That's what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that makes complete sense to me. And all right. Well, so given that this was part of your relationship, it was very much known. You know, neither of you had a secret faith crisis or anything like that. So, did you guys come up with Brother Jake together, or how did that work?
We kind of did. And now I finally get to tell the story. Well, actually, you can tell the first part of the story, because a lot of the impetus for this was, yes, there was a lot of this angst. We were part of a local Mormon stories group, and I was kind of grappling with like Book of Mormon historicity type stuff and feeling a lot of conflict about that. But it was one day in church, and you had this particular experience. You want to tell about that?
Yeah, so we were in a really great ward, and we're still friends with a lot of the people of the ward we were in Bloomington. And
Indiana.
Bloomington, Indiana.
Every state has a Bloomington, I swear.
Is it?
No, I mean, I don't know if that's technically true.
Okay. Bloomington, Indiana.
Sorry.
But, you know, it's a Mormon ward, and so I was in Relief Society, and the teacher, me and this teacher did not see eye to eye on very many things, but she kept on insisting, like, the gospel is simple. No, what was it? Relief Society, or was it?
No, it was because you were young women's. You were in the...
Oh, yeah.
You got released.
That's right. I was teaching a young women's lesson, and one of the teachers that was called as another teacher, like, I was talking about how, you know, it's complicated. Like, sometimes it's very clear where right and wrong is, and sometimes it's hard to... No, I don't know. It's just not black and white. I think I was explaining things that way to the girls. And, you know, sometimes there could be someone in your high school who, you know, might be doing drugs. That doesn't mean they're a bad person. That just means they might not be making great choices, but we should not be friends with them. Things like that. Anyway, and the other teacher was just like, no, the gospel is simple. It's black and white. Like, this is what we do when we repent and we pray and we follow the church, and then everything is good and that's it. And I'm sure the story was more complicated than that, but basically that general concept. And I just, when we were walking home or driving home, I was just like, I'm just so sick of hearing the gospel is simple. Like, every time I'm at church, I feel conflicted and I get tension headaches about things that seem straightforward, but then in practice really aren't. And Anyway, and so we were talking about it, and then Jake was like, well, let's just explain the gospel. Let's just lay it out. Every part of the Mormon gospel, not the Christian gospel, but the Mormon gospel, and see how simply we can put it. And from then on, like, Jake has been 98.9% of Brother Jake. Like, everything is his, and I just, you know, make sure things are in the right place and give some ideas for, oh, let's add this picture here or let's move this paragraph. But it's almost entirely his creative baby.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I remember that when you're talking about the gospel simple, like, what is the minimum, if you wanted to just have a boilerplate of like the minimum information necessary to be acquainted with what Mormons call the gospel and from what missionaries are teaching people as the gospel, if you just kind of laid it all out as simply as possible, but, you know, a complete explanation, what would it sound like? Would it sound simple? And we've been watching a lot of Crash Course World History with John Green, which is kind of aesthetically, that's kind of what I was trying to mimic. So it's very, he talks really fast and there's a lot of kind of funny little graphics that come in and he has these weird kind of asides and it's
very simplistic.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anyway, so is that like that aesthetic is what I was trying to copy and mimic. But yeah, that was the first one. That was kind of the impetus for it. So like I put together I wrote a script, recorded it, animated it, and then I just showed – I had the file and I showed it at the next like Mormon Stories group meeting.
Indianapolis Mormon Stories gathering.
That's the one. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge hit. People really, really liked it. So I uploaded it like the next week. I didn't really think ahead. I really should have thought ahead a little bit more because if I thought ahead like, oh, this could be like an ongoing series, then I would have made like three or four – and then started uploading them, so I could like be ahead of the curve a little bit, so I wasn't constantly just digging myself out of a hole. But I actually kind of jumped the gun. I uploaded the first one, and then I was like, oh shoot, now I have to make another one like from scratch. So anyway, from that point, that's what I've been doing.
Like, how did people?
Just on YouTube. I just put it on YouTube, and I shared it with like two or three people on Facebook.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I thought you shared it with more people than that.
No, I mean, it was like I put it in that Indianapolis Mormon Stories group Facebook group.
Yeah.
That was it.
Wow.
And so your intended audience was this group, right? Or was it more broad at the time?
Well, I kind of wanted to be anyone that was kind of in a position that I was. So I did see – I think initially or earlier you asked if it was – helped me kind of process this. And it was meant – intended as a therapeutic exercise. I guess it was the main audience was anybody that was in the same position that I was, which is somebody that is hearing the same things because I'm hearing the same phrases and the same words and stuff that I had always heard like growing up. But all of a sudden, it's kind of like when you play Happy Birthday in a minor key and it sounds in a major key, it's like, you know, it's this happy thing of, you know, celebrating somebody's life in a minor key. Then you realize, oh, this is kind of, you know, we're marching towards death. A birthday is another milestone in our path to the grave. You know, it just the connotation all changed. And I wanted to be able to get something together. I wanted to put something together that would speak to that dissonance that I was hearing and also communicate how the same things, familiar phrases can – these familiar Mormon phrases and Mormon ideas that used to be comforting or typically are comforting can sound bizarre or off-putting or exclusionary to somebody approaching it from a different point of view.
Huh, that's fascinating. All right, so how about you, Erica? Did the Brother Jake videos help you in your transition?
I don't know. I feel like I have been transitioning or discovering my relationship to Mormonism since I left home, I guess. And so I think I had a little bit more of a running start than Jake did. And so I think they were helpful in like looking at all of, because he would do a lot of research and sometimes I would help him. Mostly he would do all the work of, you know, of the different branches of Mormonism, or, you know, what specific rules were in the handbook at a certain time, and, you know, lots of specific information that kind of helped give me more more grounding or more of a reference point for when these things were happening and the history of the development of the church and correlation and things like that. But I don't know if it was as impactful therapeutically for me. If to me it was kind of just, it was kind of fun.
I don't know if you had, because you didn't have as much like internal conflict about a lot of these things, because you kind of made peace with it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think I had internal conflict about it, but I think some of the internal conflicts I had were different, and maybe I had made some peace about it by then. And I don't know. I still think that there's a little bit more anger. Like Jake feels a little bit more anger to the church than I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
All right. So what would you say your responses were to Brother Jake early on, and has that changed over time?
You mean like individually or like in our friends and family?
A good question. Whichever one you want to answer.
Why don't you talk about how your parents see it?
Well,
that has been interesting.
I don't know how they see it anymore. I think so. They always come to the watch parties at Sunstone. Well, there's only been two, but they've come to both watch parties at Sunstone. And even though my mom really doesn't like them, because not because they're critical, but because they're simplistic, she likes to see all sides of the story being told. And this is very, you know, satirical and one-sided and simplistic. But every time we play the sexist one, she still is sitting with her arms folded and just chuckles at some of the comments, and thinks a lot of them are funny. But there are some that kind of, you know, hit hard in some ways that they don't like, because, you know, they're believers and they love the church, but they do see some criticism. They do think aspects of it are funny and are well said. They think, at least my mom thinks, Jake is very talented at expressing things. She doesn't always like what he's expressing, but
yeah, I can see her liking the sexist one. I remember that video well too. That was art. Well, maybe they're all were works of art, but that one especially. Wow.
Yeah, that's I think that's a fan favorite across the board.
And was that not therapeutic for you to that one?
Because
gender issues have been a big.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess I shouldn't say that they're not therapeutic at all, but like watching the, you know, laughter is a good way to cope with things that make you upset. Mm. And so being able to laugh about it is therapeutic. I shouldn't say that. They are therapeutic for me too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Erica, that's an excellent segue, because I would love to spend some time talking about that phenomenon a little more, about how being able to laugh can help through some of the more painful bits of a transition. So has anyone given you that kind of feedback, or do you guys remember any particular stories or of people who have communicated that to you?
Jake's got loads.
Well, yeah. So I've gotten a lot of emails about that type of thing. And if somebody emails me at my Brother Jake email account, I do my best to respond as quickly as I can. But I've gotten a lot of emails of people that have said, thank you so much for the videos. I appreciate them. It's always, you know, therapeutic. I could either laugh or cry, and I enjoy being able to laugh and feel like there's somebody that's kind of validating some of the issues that I'm seeing. And that's been great. It was actually kind of another, it was like a step up from that, being, because making online stuff is kind of hard, because you're very removed from. It's not like theater. It's like theater, you have this immediate proximity to the people that are consuming the art that you're making, or whatever, you know, the performance. the performance and the audience are
immediate feedback.
Yeah, they're connected. But internet videos, you make them and you just kind of send them off into the ether, and you hear that people enjoy them, and you see like that, you know, it has so many views, and that means something. But it's not the same as being able to watch people enjoy them in real time, you know, or in person. So 2 years ago, I was invited to come to Sunstone, and we had like a lunch, like Erica was mentioning, the watch party. We just had like over the lunch hour, they put us in one of the bigger rooms, and I just hooked up some of the videos, and we'd watch the videos, and then watch a couple of videos and do a Q&A, watch a couple of videos, do a Q&A. And it was really – I've gotten a lot of people that have come up to me at Sunstone and have said – thank you so much for what you do, and it's been very therapeutic for me. I'm a big fan. It's been very gratifying to hear people say that. And there have been a couple instances where people have reached out to me and said that they didn't really know how to that watching those videos were kind of a pivotal moment for them and their relationship with their significant other, to kind of help them understand where they were coming from and get them on the same page. So,
like,
you know,
a video.
Right. Brother Jake has saved marriages. I want to, that's what I want to get. All right.
Yeah. You don't know the results.
Right. Yeah. Who knows? But I want to make that claim though. That would be amazing.
I think you can.
Okay. Thank you.
No one's stopping
me. Yeah. No one's stopping me. You're not going to stop me, are you, Christy?
Nope.
Oh,
nope.
Brother Jake has proven marriage saver.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. I mean, these relationships can be incredibly rocky, especially if in the beginning. There's been that, like we talked about earlier, that period of isolation where, you know, they can't talk to anyone about it. They're so afraid about what their spouse is going to think. And so, you know, to be able to tell them, and then, you know, after that, there's sometimes a fallout, but to be able to at least, you know, come together to watch something that, you know, it's fun for everybody, or it can be. I mean, especially I think some of the earlier ones you did, right? They were kind of ambiguous for some. I mean, did you ever get any reactions from people who thought you were serious or?
Oh, I always get reactions.
He still does.
I always get reactions. Every single time I get reactions from people that think I'm being serious, which is good. I use that as kind of a bellwether for making sure that my tone isn't drifting too much. And that's actually one thing that Erica has been – I put her in charge. She's the keeper of the tone.
Yeah, so, that's probably my biggest contribution.
Yeah, it's a huge contribution too, because I kind of have a tendency – to
push
now
that
I'm
envelope.
Making these, let's push the envelope. Let's push a little more. And so she reins me in a lot of times. Said, you know, this is a little on the nose, or this is too much. You should rein it back in. So she's helping me.
Normally, what I say is, Brother Jake wouldn't say this.
Exactly. She said, Brother Jake wouldn't say this. This is too much. This is too extreme. So that I've tried to not let the tone drift.
It's drifted, but not too much.
But the thing is. I would be – I mean, there's no way to do this, but it would be interesting to run a scientific study and ask people – like have people watch them in another order, like in a random order, and see if the tone is drifting. Because I think that part of it might be that people are kind of tuning into it. Well, the first two were definitely more mild though. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I just talked myself out of it.
It's shifted a little bit, but not as much as maybe it would have.
It would have shifted much more without you. It would be worse without you, for sure.
Oh, that's nice of you.
Oh, yeah, you guys, say it again. You make a great team. This is really interesting to hear about these internal dynamics. I love it. So how did you guys become hooked into Infants on Thrones?
That's an interesting point. We, Glenn Ostland was our home teacher in Indiana.
He did his job once.
Yep, he came. He gave one home teaching lesson where.
I think we just talked about music.
No, but I think that he tried to, like, he was like, but what do you really think about DNC 132?
He did?
Yeah, I think so. Or maybe that could have been a Mormon Stories thing. But basically, like...
He was in our Indianapolis Mormon Stories group.
Right, right.
Where it all began.
Mm-hmm. So he was in that same thing. And that was when... I think he was still doing Mormon Expression at that point. But then, you know, a year after I started doing after I started doing Brother Jake, he approached me and said, would you be interested in being a panelist on Infants on Thrones? And I was really excited to do it. I mean, he had.
And first you were like highlighting Brother Jake stuff and you were creating some other things. And then the more you were on it, the more they liked you. And
right. Yeah. It was kind of a. It was somewhat gradual. Like I did a couple kind of one-off things, and then they asked me if I wanted to be like a permanent member, which has been another great. It's just been a great network of people that I can hang out with and talk to about stuff that's interesting to me. So it's more just fun conversations with buddies.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I have to say I loved, you know, going back to Brother Jake in terms of cameos, that one with the essays, when the church essays were first really released. And you guys did that infomercial?
I forget about that one.
That's a great one. And I think that was your idea. I think that was like, we should do an infomercial about it. And then it was all...
Yeah, that was one of my best. That one and the Britney Spears Pride Cycle. Those are my two best ideas. Yes.
That's a really, really good one.
The rest of them are jakes. But that one.
Those were gems. That one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, honestly, I had a feeling that was you, Erica, the infomercial. Tell me more about the Britney Spears Pride Cycle.
Oh, so in the Book of Mormon, when he's explaining the Book of Mormon and like how the Nephites become the Lamanites and then they turn good again and there's... Anyway...
Right, right. So explaining the Nephite pride cycle that you always hear about in Sunday school, where like they're righteous and then they're blessed and then they become prideful and then they become sinful and then they're laid low and then they become righteous again. And Erica, if you watch that particular portion, Erica said you should have Britney Spears, but at different stages in her life. So like, oops, I did it again. And then like Crossroads. And then, like, when she shaved her head, and not that shaving your head is bad, but she went a little crazy. She went a little crazy. And then, like, Femme Fatale.
That's what her comeback.
Her comeback.
Yeah.
In the past. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right.
You can edit that. Right,
yeah. If you watch the infomercial one, the way that she played it was so perfect, where she'd, like, squint at the screen and then be like, oh, and, like, do these really exaggerated facial expressions. They're so great.
Yes, they really were. They really were.
That was a good one.
Mm-hmm. I think that one helped a lot of people who were really just either sad or wanting more from the essays or just being kind of feeling betrayed. And so here, we'll do it, the thinking, so you don't have to.
Essays a tricky thing because there's so many things that the church has said, like, this didn't happen or this doesn't exist. And then it's so clear that it does. And so the church has to figure out how to deal with it. And it's just, it's a tricky, I would not want to be running the church right now.
I feel like that's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
It really is. Like, I honestly feel bad for them for having to deal with how to keep the church together and be honest without, like...
Being too honest?
Well, no, just breaking people's testimonies, because when you have things like a prophet will never lead you astray, and then there are things that the prophet did that many prophets did that were not, so great, then it's hard to hear that.
Yep, it's true. And so that's where humor can come in. Well, yeah, we're not going to get that from the institutional church. That'll be the day when they're self-aware and enough to make fun of some of the thornier bits, but that's where you guys come in. Mm-mm. So...
I don't know, man. Those there was like the new era had this like a little cartoon strip in it. I don't remember who drew it.
God,
I thought
it was,
I swear,
one cartoon strip in a new era, or this was like
no, like it was a recurring thing, and okay. It was always like the missionaries go and they're like, my bike broke, but now I have a hoverboard. I don't know exactly what it was. Okay, that's not a great one.
No.
But I don't remember. They were all like very tame jokes of like, oh, I forgot the carrots in my Jello salad, that type of thing. It was.
Well, yeah, Mormons are good at making fun of themselves when it like doesn't matter, like carrots and Jello salad.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So what more do you want? Some grade A stuff.
Mm-hmm. The weightier matters of the gospel, right? They can.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what would you guys say to some of your viewers and listeners who are maybe in the midst of their faith crisis and they've benefited from Brother Jake and some from Infants too, and you know, they're almost like a fix, like you gotta get their Brother Jake fix. What would you say to those people in terms of giving them encouragement or maybe speaking from personal experience, if there's anything that you can add, I mean, because you guys have been through it, it sounds like. What would you say to these folks?
Tread lightly with your family. That's what I would say. Find the people that you can open up to and go slowly. I don't know. Listen to your conscience about when to say to open up completely to some people. Like, I think some relationships, like, it's sometimes better not to, like, rip a Band-Aid off, maybe.
Right.
Like, it's, relationships are important, and, yeah, and just be respectful of people's belief system, and you don't have to prove them wrong if you think that they are incorrect on something, but you also don't need to feel like they have to prove you, you know, you can be where you are. I don't know, this is all very veiled, but, yeah,
a lot of this sounds like, this is like fortune cookies.
Find people who you can open up to. No, but
a handsome stranger will
yeah, find,
bring you a fine gift.
Find people you can open up to, but don't ruin relationships with your family over the church, over different opinions of the church. That's mm-hmm. what I would say.
Yeah, good advice. So you're saying not to send, you see all your family and friends, the Brother Jake video on the plan of salvation.
Right.
Not a great idea.
And I speak from experience because I actually, the thing is, I ran across, one of my brothers ran across the Brother Jake videos. Like, one of his friends shared them with him, was like, you're Mormon, right? Check out this video. And he's like watching. He's like, that's my little brother. So, like, just kind of on his own, he stumbled across it. So he contacted me, and I always kind of thought of him as one of the more conservative siblings. But he was like, you know, I think you're making a lot of good arguments here. And, you know, he was like, I'm disappointed that you didn't tell me that this was happening before, because I agree with a lot of the criticisms that you're making. And I was emboldened by this, and I thought, oh, wow, well, maybe this could – so I, like, emailed my whole family and said, just so you know, I'm making these videos, but I know none of you will have a problem with it, because that's just – you're just – it's all good, right? And some of them were like, no, this is really offensive to me. I had some strained relationships after that. It didn't ruin anything. But basically you know, I misjudged that particular situation. And, you know, I'm kind of more of it sounds weird because I have a YouTube channel and a podcast and things. But in general, like, my default position is don't ever tell anybody anything ever about anything. Like, never – don't share with anybody anything. But that's
a little extreme.
That's a little extreme.
But I would, yeah, but I would say don't, with respect other people's faith journey, wherever that may lead, and don't feel like you need to force other people to believe what you believe. Whether you're Mormon or TBM or ex-Mormon or in between, like honor where you are and honor where other people are.
So I want to bring something up, and I want everybody's input on this, because it's something that I'm trying to figure out how to do. And I think that this is something that a lot of people going through a faith transition, especially if they have friends and family close to them who are Mormon, feel like if they go through this transition where they no longer believe in Mormonism, but the their Mormon friends and family are still kind of still interact in a way that kind of assumes that baseline common cultural experience of we're all Mormon, right? Like, does it mean if you just never bring up the fact that you don't believe in Mormonism anymore, or you never acknowledge it, are you just kind of does it force your relationship to be somewhat like superficial with them because you can never interact on a deeper level because there's this fundamental misunderstanding that you have between you, or this fundamental difference in the way that you view the world?
Yeah, I think to some extent.
Oh, Erica, yeah, tell me more about that, Erica.
Wait, so what do you mean? Like,
elaborate. Well, no one is 100% honest with anyone. Like,
it's a wonderful thing to hear from your wife. Who's Jeff? Tell me. Jeff. I know. That's become my new.
If you think I look fat one day, you're not going to say that. Like, I hope you don't. Like, you got to have a sort of filter. And, like, no one is totally sincere.
Yeah, but that's kind of a trivial example.
I know, but I'm just – no one is 100% honest all the time. And I personally think that's fine. I think maybe you shouldn't live your whole life not telling – your parents that you don't fully believe in the church, or maybe you should. It depends on that relationship, and I think it depends on a lot of things.
Well,
but there is some superficiality if you're not completely honest.
And I mean,
they talk like that.
So I had this summer, I had a several day camping trip with my brothers and my brothers-in-law. And we had a great time, but a lot of the time there were a lot of the conversations that kind of went on that were so entrenched in Mormonism that I felt like a total outsider, and I didn't want it never occurred to them that that's what was going on, because to them, like, if you're in a Mormon worldview, then it's not strange to talk about talk about this shared worldview with the people close to you. But like, being on the outside, I felt like – I don't know. I guess I just kind of felt separated from the experience in a way, and it was sad. Like, it really was kind of a sad – I had a lot of great conversations with them, and we had a wonderful time, and it was this great bonding experience. But there was like a sense of sadness that I had about it, because I felt like I'm never going to have that aspect of my relationship with them will never – come back.
Yeah.
It will never be the same. We're never going to connect to the same extent, because there's this thing that it's something that is all encompassing way that they live their life that I have rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know how to, like, it's a hard thing to say, like, that's just the way it is. But I guess accepting that has been important to me, I guess. Accepting that has been something that has helped me better navigate these relationships for what they are, rather than trying to make them into something that they're never going to be again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's the sad thing. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think you're not alone, that this is the phenomenon of looking, being outside, looking in, and then having to mourn this difference in how you're going to relate to family, that it's not going to be as straightforward, as simple, as it was before the transition. I like what you said about acceptance. I mean, easy to say, hard to do, but I could hear in the tone of your voice that you understand that it's not easy. You've experienced it. This has been a tough process for you. And at the same time, I mean, here you are. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you might already be somewhat at the end of the tunnel at this point.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. Neither of us are in the midst of anything.
Right.
Yeah.
I've had some success with, generally I don't, I mean, apart from like the initial revelation of telling my family that, yeah, I'm not, you know, I don't believe in Mormonism anymore. When it comes to like specific issues, I never initiate conversations about those just because it's not, I'm happy to discuss it if somebody approaches me, but I never initiate conversations about that type of thing because I just feel like it can't go well.
It's just like you're rubbing someone's face in it.
Right.
But if they're curious about where you are, mm-hmm. then you can have an open conversation without it feeling like you're attacking them.
Right. Exactly. Because they asked you. So in general, that's been my rule of thumb. In general, is just don't initiate these types of conversations with people that are, especially people that are close to you.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, and that helps with the backfire effect too, right? That if you're not actively, you know, trying to get this information out in immediate vision, then they're not going to be as defensive, and then more likely to, that mean less likely to mm-hmm. dig their heels in further, because I mean we know the human mind is very good at doing that when it feels threatened. So
right,
yeah. So you guys are just letting others lead, and I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we end, I just have one more question. What do you guys see the future for Brother Jake being? Do you ever see it ending? Or will it be eternal?
I'll let you respond.
I mean, I don't know if it's going to be around in 20 years. That's too far down the road. I've slowed down a bit just because
you have a job now.
Right, I have a job now. Anyway, I can't. So my goal is to have, you know, at least to have like maybe, you know, at least three videos per year. Before I was doing them initially, I was doing them like once a month, and it was like every 2 months and every 3 months. So at least, you know, like a few videos per year on there's a, you know, deep docket of subjects that I'd like to touch on. So those are I have plenty of material for things that I'd like to touch on and things I'd like to talk about. But I think, probably just at a slower pace, but I think I'll continue to do it for, the foreseeable future anyway.
Well, I know that's good news for a lot of the listeners here, so yay!
Right. Well, 10 minutes of joy every mm-hmm. 4 months.
And, it's, say hi to your parents for me. They're good people.
I will. Yeah. They are good people. I'm excited to see that we're going to be with them in Seattle.
Thanks for joining us today on Mormon Transitions. If you enjoyed this episode, please help us make more like it by becoming a subscriber at mormontransitions.org. Music for this episode was provided by Iris Dement.
Some say they're going to a place called glory, and I ain't saying it ain't a fact. But I've heard that I'm on the road to purgatory, and I don't like the sound of that. Well, I believe in love, and I live my life accordingly. But I choose to let the mystery be. Everybody is wondering.